no sense.
This is the Relic Radio Show, old-time radio entertainment still standing the test of time, from RelicRadio.com. Welcome back to the Relic Radio Show. Thanks for joining me this Tuesday. I've got another hour of radio drama for you this week. Beginning with John Steele Adventurer, we'll hear Ascent, his story from February 7th, 1950. After that, it's Author's Playhouse and Bad Dream, their episode from July 21st, 1944.
Take one man with a dream of the past. Let him face the future on the sheer cliffs of a towering mountain. That's our story, Ascent, taken from the files of John Steele, adventurer.
Friends, this is John Steele. We're back this week to bring you another story of action and excitement. And this is one of my favorites. Some of my guests I've known quite well, and others only slightly. But this week's guest I know very well. Larry and I have been friends ever since he was an awkward kid. I've watched him grow into young manhood. Believe me, I'm mighty proud of him. Suppose you take over from here, Larry, before I tell the whole story. Folks, this is Larry Marshall.
I guess mountain climbing fever runs in families. That's the only explanation I could find, because believe me, nobody was more surprised than I was. You see, my dad was killed in 1938, just before the war. He and four friends set out to climb the Dirnelberg, one of the lesser peaks of the Swiss Alps, and, well, they just disappeared. I was a kid away in prep school at the time, so I got all my information secondhand from my mother. It seems they sent out search parties, but they never found them. I wanted to go home, but Mother said it wasn't necessary. I remember lying in my bunk up at school late at night crying, swearing that someday I'd climb that mountain and find out what happened to my dad. Then the war came along and postponed my plans. But after the war, I took my discharge in Europe, wrote the families of all of Dad's original party, asking them to help finance the expedition. And this was the surprise. They all wanted to come along. So I went ahead to Oberhofen, a little town at the base of the mountain, and settled down in a cozy inn to wait for the others. Within a month, they were all there, including John Steele, who'd come over at Mother's suggestion.
It's good to see you again, Larry.
Oh, it's good to see you too, John. John, why did Mother ask you to come?
Well, you know how mothers are.
Still doesn't trust me to take care of myself.
I wouldn't say that. It's hard for your mother to realize.
John, I've been through a war.
I know.
I'd resent it under any other circumstances.
You mean because I was your dad's closest friend?
Yeah, I guess so.
Well, that's the only reason I came.
Well, I'm glad you did.
I was supposed to go on that trip with your dad.
Oh, I never knew that before.
Yes, everything was all arranged.
It's funny you never told me.
Canceled my plans at the last minute.
Why?
I don't know.
John, does it strike you as strange that all these people wanted to come along?
Oh, I don't know.
It's been 10 years. Why should they want to?
You did.
Well, I had a reason.
Maybe they have theirs.
What do you mean?
Just conjecture. You're not worried taking a group of amateurs up the Dornelberg, are you?
Oh, well, they've all had some experience.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Besides, with you along, we're both seasoned climbers.
Yeah.
Well, come on. You may as well meet them now.
Okay.
They're certainly a strange collection.
I'm not surprised.
Well, folks, here's the fellow we've been waiting for. John, this is Michael Murphy, John Steele.
Hello, Mr. Murphy.
Call me Mike, John. Everyone else does.
Mike it is.
Mike's brother was on the trip with Dad.
Yeah, I remember. I remember.
John, this is Jerry Livingston.
Hello, Jerry.
How do you do, Mr. Steele?
Well, since we're being informal, why don't you just call me John?
Well, I'd rather not.
Whatever you say.
Jerry's in the same spot I'm in. He lost his dad on the trip, too.
Yes.
And this is George Weishart.
Oh, Steele.
Doing a little celebrating, eh, George?
Nothing wrong with celebrating a
good... No, of course not. It's just that if I'm going to guide this party, then I'm responsible for your safety.
I've been up a lot tougher mountains than Dornelberg.
This time of year, any mountain's tough.
Well, don't worry about it. Dornelberg may have killed my brother, but it won't beat me.
Oh, I'm sure George will be in shape by morning.
Oh, sure.
This is Virginia Hamilton, John.
How do you do, John?
Hello, Virginia.
Isn't it just too exciting for words?
I suppose you might say that.
I mean, the anticipation and everything after all these years.
Yes, of course.
I know just how Mother felt the night before they left.
Perhaps.
Dear Dad, he's such an old stay-at-home, but Mother used to enjoy this sort of thing.
Yes, if you'll excuse
me. It's sort of elemental.
Of course. Now,
I feel almost...
Yes, Virginia. We have 8 days of hard work ahead of us, folks. Is there anyone who feels he can't make it?
Oh, no.
No, of course not.
Okay. Larry's gotten all our equipment ready. Now, I've arranged for us to be awakened at 4.
In the morning?
Yes, Virginia. We have to be on our way by 5.
But that's so early.
Well, good night, folks. See you all in the morning.
Yeah, good night. Mr. Steele.
Time to turn in, Larry.
Yeah. I think I'll get just a breath of air before I hit the sand.
Good idea.
Come on the terrace, John.
Okay.
Weather chart looks good.
You never tell in October.
No. Air feels clean.
Uh-huh.
Oh, it's a beautiful mountain.
Yes, it is.
Doesn't seem possible.
What?
After all these years, I'm here.
I was hoping you'd forget about this during the war.
Well, I almost did. Can't wait any longer.
What do you expect to find up on that mountain, Larry?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know.
Are you sure you want to make this trip?
Yes, John. Very sure. The next morning, we made our way up through the groves and gentle slopes of the wasteland, everyone pretty much setting their own pace, and by late afternoon, we were approaching the guide's hut. I noticed that Weishart had lagged behind a couple of hundred yards, so I dropped back to see if he was all right. Everything okay?
Just taking my time.
There's no hurry. Almost there now.
Yeah, I know.
You know?
I mean, it's after 5, I assume we're getting close.
Oh. George, what was your brother like?
Hmm?
I said...
I heard you.
Well?
If you don't mind.
Well, of course. I had no idea. After 10 years, you wouldn't want it. Did I say something funny?
Very.
Well, I guess...
There was no love wasted between me and Tom.
Oh.
I hated him.
But then why...
Why what?
Why do you want to go up the mountain?
You know, you ask too many questions, kid.
Maybe I do.
You mind your business, I'll mind mine.
That's okay with me. Well, it's just over this slope.
Good.
Yeah, there it is. Well, the others are already there.
Meaning?
Nothing, George. Oh, John, where's Virginia?
Down by the brook, cooling her feet.
Well, I think I'll take some of the sand.
Just call when supper's ready.
Okay. Oh, hi.
This brook's just too delicious for words.
Tired?
Oh, the back of my legs simply throb. Come on, take off your shoes and give it a try.
Well, all right. You've talked me into it. Ah.
Isn't that simply wonderful?
That feels good.
Is that all you can say?
That feels fine.
It's not much better. Oh, it's been a simply thrilling day.
Has it?
Of course.
Yeah, I guess it has been a good day.
You guess?
Oh, I hadn't really noticed.
Oh,
you see, I take this trip pretty seriously.
Why on earth?
It's something I've been promising myself that I'd do ever since my dad was lost.
That's silly.
Silly? Maybe. Why did you come along?
Just for fun. Sounded like a good idea. Besides, I was bored with New York.
I see.
Well, there's really nothing to be so intense about.
No?
You don't honestly think we're going to find anything up there, do you?
I don't know what I think.
Well, that isn't the silly...
What was your mother like, Virginia?
Mother? Oh, I don't know. I can barely remember her.
You weren't that young.
I just never knew her very well. See, she and Dad were separated when I was a youngster.
Oh.
I never saw her very much after that. As a child, I remember that she cried a good deal. She and Dad were always fighting over something.
I see.
The only thing that I know she loved was being outdoors. Of course, Dad couldn't stand that.
No.
Come and get it, kids!
We're coming! Such a dear.
Huh?
Oh, really, Larry? Don't be a dolt. Come on, I'm simply starving.
By mid-morning of the next day, we had reached the foot of the glacier lying between two huge ridges that swept up the Dornelberg. When we got up on the smooth ice of the glacier, John insisted that we rope up as a precaution. So we split up into two teams, Steele, Virginia, and Weishart on one rope, Jerry, Murphy, and myself on the other. John led the way, sounding with his ice axe before each step and watching for the discolorations that were sure signs of the voids under them. A sense of uneasiness was growing inside me. I wanted to know more about these people I was climbing this mountain with.
Can't we rest a bit, John? I'm simply exhausted.
Okay, Virginia.
Can't waste time if we're going to make the first terrace by dark.
5 minutes more won't make that much difference.
Well, how you doing, Jerry?
Okay.
Well, just sit where you are.
Yeah.
You okay, Mike?
Strap on my rucksack's been loosening up for the last hour.
Oh, well, here, I'll help you.
Yeah. Really beautiful up here, isn't it?
Yeah.
So clear.
Uh-huh. There, try that.
Yeah. That's much better.
Huh. Cigarette?
Oh, thanks. Lips are about to split.
We'll use more windburn cream.
Must have a gallon of the stuff on now. What causes those ice towers?
Buckling pressure where the glacier meets the mountain.
Oh, they're beautiful.
Yeah, to look at, you mean.
Yeah, what do you think?
Well, if one of them falls over and starts down the glacier, you don't want to be in the way.
Yeah, I see what you mean. Pretty risky, huh?
Well, nothing about mountain climbing that's easy.
Makes me wonder.
Well, what?
What we're all doing here.
Why did you come?
Really Mary's idea.
Who's Mary?
Pat's wife. He was my brother.
Oh.
See, I was always crazy about Mary, and when Pat was lost, well, I waited the proper time, then I asked her to marry me. She said no. Because while Pat was legally dead, she still felt married in the eyes of the church. Kind of a funny attitude, because after all, they never did get along.
Oh, I see. Whose fault was that?
Who can say? Pat was a nice guy. Mary's a little hard to live with. I think I could get along with her.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, she said if I came on this trip and found any real evidence that they were all killed, then she'd marry me.
Search parties never found them.
I know.
Well, then why?
The only unusual angle of the whole deal was the fact that just before he left, Pat took $50,000 out of the bank in cash.
That's a lot of dough.
Yeah, for a trip to Europe.
Yeah.
Okay, folks, on your feet.
Okay, John. Listen, Mike, I want to talk to Jerry. Don't get too close to us, huh?
Yeah, sure. That's just between you and me, Larry.
Right. Well, feel rested, Jerry?
Oh, much better.
You've been kind of quiet all day.
Well, I've been thinking.
I know what you mean.
They came up this glacier 10 years ago. Maybe over the same route.
Maybe.
It's the closest I've been to Dad for a long time.
What do you mean?
I don't know. I kind of feel him all around me.
Must have been quite a guy.
Oh, the best. I thought the world of him.
Yeah, I understand.
No, you don't. No one ever loved his father the way I loved mine.
Well, take it easy, fella.
Sorry. It's been so long.
Yeah.
Nobody understood him like I did. Such an idealist. Nothing ever worked out for him.
Maybe it wasn't such a good idea, your coming along on this trip.
Oh, no. My psychiatrist said it was the best thing in the world for me.
Why?
Well, he says it's not knowing that's made me so nervous.
Oh, I see.
He says maybe if we can find proof that they were killed, maybe I can be myself again.
Well, maybe he's right.
Yeah. What's that?
I don't know.
Keep your eyes open!
What is it, Steele?
Ice buckling!
Look at that tower shaking!
It's going to fall!
Watch it! Oh, sliding down the glacier!
Headed this way!
Get over!
All right, come on, Jerry.
No!
Come on!
Maybe that's how Dad might have...
Oh, I'm sorry, fella. Mike, help me drag him.
Yeah, coming. Hang on to him.
All right, grab his legs.
Right. Here we go.
Everyone okay?
I turned my ankle.
Oh, that was close.
Okay, Mike?
Yeah, okay.
Jerry, come on, kid. Come on, open your eyes.
Dad.
We made it over the icefall and up to the first terrace by dark. The next morning, Virginia's ankle was so swollen that John decided to leave her with the tent and enough supplies while the rest of us pushed on. It had turned cold during the night, and we all pulled on extra sweaters and mittens before we started climbing. We worked our way up the gentle slope of the terrace till mid-morning when the ledge became noticeably narrower.
What do you think, John?
Terrace is good for another couple hundred of yards.
I haven't seen anything that looked scalable.
I've been watching, too.
You gotta find something soon.
Well, maybe we should have started around the other way.
Never lose altitude if you can help it. Cardinal rule of mountain climbing, Jerry.
Mm. Really cuts in here.
Yeah.
John, hold it.
Huh?
How about right here?
Pretty steep.
A little at first. If we can get up the first 30 feet, looks like the cliff face falls off after that. The
corner isn't bad. You get a leg on each side.
It might go. I'm willing.
All right, what do you say, George?
It's okay by me.
It's the best we've seen.
Well, let's go, then.
Right. Rope up, everyone.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
I'll lead. Then George, Jerry, Mike,
yeah.
And Larry, you bring up the rear.
Yeah. Okay. Well, tie those knots tight. I'll leave about 40 feet between you and George, Jerry.
Yeah.
Here goes.
Now don't start till he signals you, George.
I know.
John, there's a handhold about 6 inches to your right.
Got it.
How is it?
Not too bad.
He'll probably stop when he gets to that ledge. Then you go, George.
I've been up a mountain before.
Yeah, sorry. A little to your left, John.
Right. Okay. Come ahead.
Go on, George.
Okay, I'm going.
And that's the way it went. First George, then Jerry, then Mike, then it was my turn. And that's the way you climb a mountain. Not in big steps, but an inch at a time. You grip with your hands, with your toes, your knees, your chest, and you crawl up it like a fly up a wall. And most of the time, it's lonely. The only company you've got's the thin lifeline of the rope twisting and turning over the rocks above you. Showers of stone beat down on your head and your shoulders, and you pull yourself up another inch, another foot, until you reach a ledge where the others have rested. But by that time, they've gone on. And then way above, you hear the leader hammering in steel pitons as he reaches the tough part of the climb. And later, you reach the piton yourself, and you feel the steel spike in your hand, and new energy flows through your muscles because you know others have been there before you. We've been climbing for about 2 hours, and we're halfway up the cliff when I inched up to a ledge and found Mike resting.
Okay, another foot, and I can pull you over the ledge, Larry.
Okay.
A little to your right.
Yeah.
That's it. Okay, now.
Thanks. Well, what's holding us up?
Cliff bulges out right above us.
Oh?
Took John a little while to work around it, get on top.
George and Jerry make it okay?
Yeah. Once we get on top, we'll be all right.
You ready for Mike, John?
Okay, send him up.
Okay, get going, fella.
Yeah.
What's the matter?
Nothing.
Feel all right?
Just a little tired, I guess.
You want to rest?
No, I'm okay.
Well, work your way straight out on the ledge about 10 feet and then start up.
Right.
And that's it. Another couple of feet. Okay, now up. That's it. There's a toehold to your right, up about a foot. Don't look down, Mike. Now, there you got it. Good. Now, can you reach that piton?
Don't think so.
Well, look, shift your weight to your left foot. Good. Now, stand on your toes and lean for it.
Can't make it.
Don't look down.
I'm slipping.
Hang on.
I'm gonna fall.
Grab the rope. Kick away from the cliff.
Help! What happened?
Mike fell.
Is he hurt?
I don't know. Hit his head. Mike, you hurt?
Help me.
All right, hang on. John, belay him up. He's hanging right below me.
Right.
We'll get you, Mike. Just hang on. That's it. Keep him coming. More. Another 20 feet. Hang on, Mike. 10 feet now. Keep him coming. That's it. 5 now. All right, hold it, John. I can reach him.
Don't reach for him. Pull him in.
Right. All right, slack off. Hold it now. Okay, John, I got him.
Loosen the rope. Cutting my chest.
Yeah, you're okay, Mike.
It's a close call.
Yeah. Let me see that cut.
How is he?
He's got a bad cut on his head.
How's he feel?
How do you feel, Mike?
Scared. Weak.
He's weak.
Better send him back down.
Right.
I'll lower the rappling rope. You let him down 50 feet. He's over the hard part. You make it alone from there.
Right.
I'm sorry, Mike.
Nothing but foolishness anyway.
Why, what do you mean?
He's dead. Everyone knows it.
Oh, I see.
Why should I risk my neck coming up this mountain?
No reason.
If you find anything, let me know.
I will.
Wish I knew for sure he was dead.
Yeah, I guess you do. We lowered Mike back down the cliff till he could go on by himself, then I worked my way up to the others. Once over the bulge, the rest was easy, and we made the second terrace by late afternoon. During the night, a heavy wind blew up, and by morning, a first-class gale was blowing. So John and I left George and Jerry to look out for the equipment, and we went on up the terrace. If the ledge went all the way to the top, we could give it a try, wind or no wind. But if the ledge ran out, and we had more scaling to do, we'd have to wait for a break in the weather.
Too bad if we have to wait.
Yeah.
Only have supplies for 5 days.
I know.
You're cutting it pretty fine.
Well, maybe the terrace goes all the way.
Maybe.
It's funny we haven't seen any sign.
Of what?
Dad's party.
What did you expect?
Oh, I don't know. John, what's that?
What?
That pile of stones looks like a cairn.
Wait a minute, Larry.
I gotta see. It may be Dad's.
Take it easy.
It is, John. It is.
Are you sure?
There's a tin can in here.
Let's see.
All right, wait till I get it open.
Anything in it?
Yeah, it's a piece of paper.
What's it say?
Wait a minute. It says Lawrence Marshall, July 28th, 1938. It's got signatures of all the others.
Let me see. You're right.
Well, now we know they got this far.
Yes, we do.
You don't seem surprised.
I've known all along.
How?
Those pythons I was hammering in coming up the cliff, they weren't my own. They were already there. I just wanted to be sure they were tight.
Dad's?
Yes.
Why didn't you tell me?
I don't know.
I don't get this, John. This whole thing is mixed up.
Why?
All these people wanted to come with us. They all had their reasons.
Well?
Some of the things they've said don't fit.
Like what?
Like Mike said his brother took $50,000 out of the bank before he left.
Yes?
Weishart acted like he'd been up this mountain before.
I see.
Weishart is the only one I really can't understand. He brushed me off when I tried to find out why he was here.
I can tell you.
You can?
Yes. 10 years ago, George Weishart was tried for the murder of his father and acquitted.
Why?
Insufficient evidence. The state's star witness was his brother. And he disappeared on the Dornelberg 2 months before the trial.
Oh.
George has been partway up the mountain before. In 1939, he tried to climb it alone and failed.
That fits.
How?
Every one of these people wanted to go with us for selfish reasons.
Yes?
And everyone on Dad's trip was unhappy through no fault of his own. Everyone except Dad.
You never knew your dad very well, did you, Larry?
Huh?
I mean, really well.
Well, I was away in school a lot. Dad traveled 6 months of the year, but I thought I knew him. Maybe I didn't.
I don't think you did.
You know, from the beginning, I've had the feeling you didn't want me to make this trip.
I didn't.
Well, why?
I can't explain.
You think Dad and the others...
I don't think anything.
I won't forget that, John. And somehow I'm going to prove you wrong.
We went on up the terrace until it started to narrow and we knew we were going to have to scale for the top. Then we went back to the tents and spent the day working on the equipment. The wind blew all day and late into the second night, but when John woke me at 4 the next morning, the gale had died down. Jerry had burned his hand badly on the Primus stove, and John decided that he couldn't make the try for the top with us. We started scaling the cliff right where we'd found Dad's cairn, me leading, Weishart next, and John on the end of the rope. John had been right. Every time I reached a tough passage and needed a python, I'd find one waiting just within arm's length. By noon, we were resting on a ledge just short of the top. The bald dome of the Dornelberg stretched 200 feet above us without even a handhold in sight. Nothing but smooth, shining rock. The ledge on which we were standing circled off to our left, and we decided to skirt the dome until we found something scalable. We worked our way around for 50 feet when the ledge suddenly narrowed to 3 or 4 inches. But we could see that after a passage of 20 feet or so, it broadened out again. It was our only chance for the top, so we decided to take it.
I tightened the rope around my chest, worked my way out on the lip. Chest and face jammed tight against the cliff, I moved along an inch at a time, trying not to think of the 7,000 feet of air under me. Inching and resting, until at last I felt the ledge widen under my feet, and I was over. Then it was Weishart's turn.
Once you get out there, keep moving.
Yeah.
You sure that rope's tight?
Think I'm a novice?
Okay, get going.
Yeah.
Attaboy, George. Keep going. Lean into the cliff. That's it.
Legs get narrow there. Don't rest yet. Keep moving. That's it. Yeah, that's it. Don't stop.
Keep going, George. Rest in another 3 feet.
Tired. I gotta rest.
Don't stop.
I gotta stop.
Keep going.
I'm tired.
You're slipping, George.
Move forward.
I can't hold on.
Hang on.
Hang on to your rope, Larry.
Yeah.
Paul's broken. Can you pull him in?
I can try.
Take it easy. Not too fast.
John, the rope is slipping over your shoulders.
Hang on to the rope, George. Hang on.
I can't. I'm slipping.
Hang on. You okay, Larry?
Yeah.
I'll be right over.
When something like that happens on a mountain, you just got to try and forget it. You got to push on, try not to think that it might have been you. John made it over to me. We worked our way along the ledge again. Finally, we found a cleft in the dome that looked scalable, and we started up. And like before, there were Dad's pythons waiting to give me a hand. In an hour, we were 10 feet from the top.
Don't hold up another foot, Larry.
All
right. That's it. Can you reach that python?
Yeah.
Now, pull yourself up to that ledge. Good.
All right, it's easy from here. Okay, John, I'm up.
Be right with you.
Come on, I can pull you up from here.
Okay.
All right, come on. All right, now kick free. That's it, 5 feet. There.
Thanks.
Well, we made it.
Yeah.
It's beautiful up here.
You can see for miles.
Yeah. World seems pretty far away.
Yes.
Dad's pythons led all the way to the top.
Meaning?
They made it, too. Ought to be a cairn or something around here.
Take a look.
I don't see anything.
Look some more.
John, come here.
What is it?
It's the other side of the mountain.
Yes?
Pythons leading down.
Well?
They must have come up one side.
Go on.
And just gone down the other.
Yes.
You mean Dad and the others are still...
Yes.
You've known all along.
I was supposed to make that climb with your dad.
But why didn't you ever tell me?
I didn't know whether or not you could keep their secret. Well, Larry, what are you going to tell the others?
Well, I'm going to tell them we found the spot where they fell. Come on, John, let's get going.
The title, Ascent, the story of a man who learned to leave the past where it belongs. And if you like Larry's story, why not come back next week, friends? I'll have a man who had an unusual adventure with a milk truck, a money press, and a sinister stranger. I like to call it Grade A. So until next week, this is John Steele saying, a life of adventure is yours for the asking, wherever you find it. Only don't look for it. It may find you. Well, goodbye and good hunting.
Remember, next week, Mutual presents Grade A, another story of suspense and action from the files of John Steele, adventurer. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
The Thin Man, usually heard over some of these stations, will not be heard tonight. Author's Playhouse. And there I was, chasing her in a bathing suit. She had on a green bathing suit, on the 10th green. She was very attractive, too. Well, gotta be going. Goodbye, honey. But for Pete's sake, what's the idea of turning your head away?
Why, George, I don't know why I did that. I didn't know I was jealous over you. But for a minute, I forgot it was a dream. I felt just as if you had been chasing Mrs. Maxwell across the 10th green.
Want to play golf this afternoon?
What was only a dream for George turned out to be a nightmare for Liz. And then, of course, there was that tattooed leg. Author's Playhouse presents Isabel Scott Rorick's hilarious tale of Freudian frivolity, Bad Dream.
What's that? Blondie? I haven't seen it yet. Swap with you when I finish the front page.
No, I'm just thinking about the craziest dream I had last night.
Toast, dear.
I was on the golf course in my bathing suit.
Toaster's ringing.
I was on the 10th green.
Take your toast out of the toaster and turn it off.
Only it didn't look like the 10th green. You know how it is in dreams.
George?
I'm getting... instead of the pool being up by the clubhouse, it was just off the 10th green.
Why don't you ever turn the toaster off when you take your toast out?
And there I was in my bathing suit.
Biggest bombing raid over Berlin.
Chasing Laura Maxwell, of all people.
Laura Maxwell?
She had on a bathing suit, too. Green. One piece.
And did you catch up with her?
Aunt Dream's amazing. Do you know what I was trying to catch her for, Liz?
I can't imagine.
She had a picture of a fish tattooed on her leg. And I wanted to ask her why. After that, we seemed to come to sort of a pool or lake. It didn't look like the clubhouse pool. And she said that she'd like me to teach her to swim.
Well, this is interesting. How long has this been going on?
What?
You and Mrs. Maxwell. Laura, to you.
Honey, this was in a dream.
Well, it'd have to be. Nowhere else would a cow like Mrs. Maxwell ever dare come out in a one-piece bathing suit.
Well, she looked pretty darn good in it, as a matter of fact.
How long have we been calling her Laura?
Oh, Liz, honey, for Pete's sake. What is all this? I don't call her Laura. I don't even know her. Except in a business way. Her husband's a Marine or something, and she's called up the bank a couple of times about his checks coming through, and she always says... This is Laura Maxwell speaking.
Oh.
Well, I've got to be going. Goodbye, honey. Well, for Pete's sake, what's the idea of turning your head away?
Why, George, I don't know why I did that. I didn't know I was jealous over you. But for a minute, I forgot it was a dream. I felt just as if you had been chasing Mrs. Maxwell across the 10th green.
Oh. You want to play golf this afternoon? Even Howie Sturm are going to play. Maybe the Blakes.
I don't know whether I have the nerve to show up on the golf course after last Saturday.
Oh, all you need is a little practice. I'll pick you up around 3.
Well, sorry.
Might be a little after 3, as a matter of fact. All depends on whether I get stuck with old Mrs. Delancey. It's about time for her to drop around again about the condition of her checking account, and you know what that always means.
Yeah. Well, I'll be ready whenever you get through.
Okay. Bye, honey.
Bye, dear. He did dream it, though. Yes, and by the look in his eye, I'd say he thoroughly enjoyed that dream.
Hello, dear. Sorry I'm late. I picked up your clubs and told Harvey to go on in case we weren't here by 3:30. I had a hunch this was the day for Mrs. Delancey.
Well, even Howie are here right now. I can see their little Betty down by the pool.
For Pete's sake, what's the matter with Eve leaving her with that Blake brat again?
Well, why not?
Well, didn't I tell you he pushed Betty into the pool yesterday?
He did.
Well, that kid's a monster. I don't know why Vivian doesn't put him in a padded cell.
Poor Vivian. I think she's done everything she can. Bobby just seems to have an excess of energy.
You mean criminal impulses. Oh, there's Howie now, up at the clubhouse. Oh, Howie! We didn't expect you to wait for us. Why didn't you and Evie go on?
There's no rush. We're waiting for the Blakes, too. They're in the clubhouse.
Hi, Eve. Hi. Say, what do you think? I got my hook, finally. Now I got a fly.
Well, I'm glad I've got you for company. I get an awful inferiority complex, being the only one in a sand trap while everybody else waits for me.
Say, you're certainly an optimist, Eve.
Why's that?
I see you've left Betty down by the pool with that Blake monster again.
Oh, Corey Cartwright's keeping an eye on him.
I didn't see Corey.
He's down there with the kids.
Is that so? Then who could this be coming out of the clubhouse?
Hi, Corey.
Why, Corey Cartwright, you said you keep an eye on Bobby.
Now, take it easy. Take it easy. Your fair daughter is safe. Bobby and I had a man-to-man talk that appealed to his sense of chivalry.
Mm-hmm.
He gave me his word of honor to protect Betty with his life.
Oh, I don't know. Maybe I'd better not play. You go on, Howard.
I'm going right back, Eve. Don't get excited. I just came up for cigarettes, and I promise you they're perfectly all right.
Why, they were playing together like a couple of...
Who is that?
Oh, that's our new member, Mrs. Maxwell. Hadn't you seen her before? Her husband's in the service, and she's supposed to be staying in town with an aunt.
Can't understand how you, Mr. Corey. You're usually the first to...
Oh, give me time, Howard. Give me time. Oh, what a beautiful dish.
Who are you talking about? Me?
Oh, hello, Vivian.
Corey's just caught his first glimpse of Mrs. Maxwell. He's still reeling.
Oh. I wonder who that woman ever sees. She's always out here playing alone. Doesn't anybody know her? George does.
Oh, Liz, for Pete's sake.
Oh, do you, George? How come?
Oh, she banks with us. That's all I know about her.
Why, George. He's so shy.
What?
Tell Eve, dear, all about you and Mrs. Maxwell running around in your bathing suits out on the 10th green.
What?
She wants George to teach her to swim.
Why, George, old man, what have you been up to?
He says that she wears a green bathing suit, one piece, and... Simply gorgeous, isn't it?
Ooh, I'll bet she does it that.
Hey, Corey, I thought you were supposed to be keeping an eye on the kid. And George says she has one particularly fascinating feature. She has a picture of a fish tattooed on her hip.
Her knee.
Why, George, this is intriguing.
Oh, Liz, now don't you think it's about time? What's that?
Oh, that's Betty. Come on.
Oh, good Lord. Bobby pushed her in again.
Aren't you ready yet, Liz? You know how Eve and Howie are about starting a bridge game on time.
As soon as I comb my hair. Would have to happen right then.
Hmm?
That hyena pushing Betty Sturm into the pool.
What do you mean?
Well, I was just about to explain that it was a joke, that I was only ribbing about your crazy dream.
Oh. What made you remember that?
It's been worrying me. I left everyone under the impression that
already forgotten it. I had. Please hurry and fix your hair, dear.
You know what? Funny how I happen to do that.
Do what?
What I was talking about. Telling that wild story about your dream. You know, somehow I couldn't resist it. Something goaded me.
Hmm.
I wish now I hadn't. I wouldn't want our friends to think...
Oh, our friends are broad-minded, Liz.
Well, at least I'd want them to think you had better taste than that.
Than what?
Laura Maxwell. Who are we talking about? She's too tall, for one thing. Don't you think so?
I don't know.
And she's given to snoods.
What?
Snoods. Those net things that hang down and catch up the ends of your hair. She's got on a different one every time I see her. You know what I mean. I've got one, only it's on the back of my little red hat.
Oh.
I wonder. Should I wear one?
What?
A hat. Sort of windy.
Well, whatever you want. Come on, let's get going.
I think I'll wear my little red one. Oh,
Liz, for heaven's sake, where have you been? Howie's simply flaunching. You know how he is, George, about starting bridge right on the dock.
Don't look at me. Liz was combing her hair.
Well, here, George, you hang up Liz's jacket like a duckling. Okay. And when you get your noses powdered, come on in. I'm in a sort of a flurry this evening. I've got to help Howie with the ice trays. In all the years we've been married, that man has never learned to get ice out of a tray.
George, you see what I see.
Hmm? Why do hangers always get tangled up in a closet?
What's she doing here?
Who?
Who does it look like in that gilt snood?
I can't see into the front room. I'm trying to hang up your doggone jacket. Who are you talking about?
The tall, statuesque blonde in the green slacks and the gilt snood.
What's the matter, Liz? Who's in green... Oh. Well, it's Laura Maxwell. How did Eve happen to ask her?
How would I know? Maybe we need the fifth for bridge.
So you know that is funny, asking anybody else over on a bridge night?
Maybe Eve was thinking only of your happiness.
Oh, Liz, for Pete's sake.
I knew something was going to come of that crazy story I started.
Oh, there's your answer. Look who's in the kitchen with Howie. Now, don't you feel silly? Eve invited her for Corey.
Well, why invite either of them? We never had six people for bridge before.
George, Liz, what's the matter? Come on, let's get started.
George was having a little snood trouble.
Oh, why, that's perfectly silly. George doesn't wear snoods, do you, George?
George should wear blinders.
So I've heard. Liz, you're to play with Corey, Howie, and me.
Come on, Liz, sit down. We're getting started half an hour late.
Coming. And George, you and Laura can play gin rummy over at this little table by the fire.
Hi, George.
Hi, Howie. Laura, dear, you know George Cougar, of course.
Why, of course I do. How are you?
Delighted, Mrs. Maxwell.
You two don't mind if we put you off in a corner by yourselves, do you?
How nice.
Delighted. Oh, may I help you with that chair?
You're sweet.
For Pete's sake, let's play bridge. Come on, Liz.
Delighted. Toast, George.
The toast.
And turn it off for once.
Look, honey, what did you want me to do? Be rude to her?
Be rude to who?
Last night at Eve's.
Oh, that. I hadn't even thought about it.
Well, then what's the matter with you this morning? I don't see what else I could do. Eve told me to play gin rummy with Laura Maxwell.
Of course she did.
I couldn't be rude, could I?
There was no danger of that. You were simply dripping with old-world charm.
Oh, for Pete's sake. All I did was hold her chair for her to sit down.
Don't bother. I'll get it. Hello? Oh, Vivian. Good morning. Oh, no, we were up extra early. We've already had our breakfast. Oh, of course, dear. We're counting on it. 8 o'clock, right? Oh, well, where does she live? Oh, yes, I guess he would, wouldn't he? Well, of course, we'll be only too glad to. We'll be over at 8 then. Bye, dear.
What was that?
What was what?
The dinner party. Vivian's been planning it for a month. It's all set for 8 o'clock, isn't it?
With a slight exception. We're supposed to bring your Mrs. Maxwell.
She isn't my Mrs. Maxwell, Liz.
I'm using Vivian's words. So I thought if you were driving, you could pick up George's Mrs. Maxwell.
Huh. Where does she live?
That's what I asked Vivian. But she said, of course, George would know, wouldn't he?
Well, guess I better get an early start for the bank. I'll have to go by the clubhouse and find out my dream girl's address.
Liz, you look simply ravishing tonight. Corey Cartwright's your dinner partner, and you take Mrs. Maxwell, George.
Liz, my beautiful, I was wondering where you were.
Oh, hello, Corey. I felt a little stuffy, so I thought I'd come out and see how Joe's vegetable garden's getting along.
How could you feel stuffy? You didn't eat 3 bites at dinner.
Oh, don't be silly. I ate like a wolf.
Now, look, Liz, I was your dinner partner, remember? I was the guy that kept talking to you and getting no answers. I saw how much you ate.
Was I that obvious?
No. To tell the truth, I think everybody was so interested in looking at Laura Maxwell, you could have eaten out of the sugar bowl without causing any stir.
Well, how come you're not with her little group of admirers in the front room?
Oh, I'm smart that way. I pick my spots when there isn't too much competition around.
Well, that sounds fairly smart.
couldn't even get a word with her now. George is doing such a masterly job of being protective.
Say, what is this about old George?
One night he had a silly dream. He was chasing Laura Maxwell over the 10th green. Well, I was fool enough to start ribbing about it the next day at the clubhouse.
Oh, then that was just a dream you were talking about.
Sure, but I never got to explain it because Bobby Blake pushed little Betty into the pool right then.
And that business about the green bathing suit and the tattoo?
That was all part of the dream.
Oh, that's wonderful. Old Mossy back strutting around making like a tiger, and he's got you to thank for it.
Very funny.
Poor Liz. You know, you always did talk too much.
Oh, shut up. Mad enough as it is. Now we've got to take her home since we brought her. And I'll have to chatter like a monkey to keep up the conversation. She never says anything. All she does is sit and smile in her beautifully aloof way. Oh, here she comes with George. And just look at him being so beautifully aloof. But I'm afraid I'm hopeless, Mrs. Maxwell. George tells me all it takes is practice to be a good golfer, but I think for me it'll take a miracle. Now, that fourth hole, that defeats me. I've never yet gotten a drive across the creek. I wish I were as good a golfer as you are.
Why, thank you.
Wasn't that a lovely dinner? I thought Vivian's table looked like a picture out of How Beautiful. Oh, we're here already? George, see Mrs. Maxwell to the front door, dear. Oh, it's been so nice talking to you, Mrs. Maxwell.
Thank you, Mrs. Cougar. Oh, why, there's Aunt Ella. I thought she'd be in bed.
La, 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 I've locked out. What I've done with the key, I can't think. Sometimes I put it under the mat, sometimes I put it in the mailbox. I never carry it. And it isn't in the mailbox or under the mat either now. And I've been waiting for
Ella,
hours.
Aunt Ella, this is Mr. and Mrs. Cougar.
Oh, how do you do? I've heard so much about you from Lala. Mr. Cougar, do you suppose it's safe to go in now? You know, I'm so relieved to have Lala running around with a nice young married couple. It's an awful responsibility trying to look after her for Melvin. That's her husband, you know. Not that Lala ever does a wrong thing, but men are just crazy about her, aren't they, honey? And Melvin's so jealous he doesn't want me to let her out of my sight. Lord, I'll never forget the day he came home from Chicago and found that little Mr. Bird teaching her to swim.
Teaching her to swim?
Tell us about it.
Well, Melvin nearly wiped the floor with poor Mr. Bird. We had to call in a physician.
My goodness.
Your husband's in the Marines, isn't he, Mrs. Maxwell?
Oh, that's right. Melvin's in the Marines. And you never saw anybody that looked more like him. He used to teach physical education, you know.
He's overseas, I believe?
Yes, he's in New Guinea now.
New Guinea? Oh, New Guinea. Oh, that's fine.
Well, Liz, how'd it go?
Vivian, you are now looking at the next woman's champion golfer. I drove over that miserable creek on the fourth hole.
Oh, at last.
Well, congratulations. Gosh, it took me 6 putts to get the thing in the cup, but you'll never know what it did to my spirits getting over that creek.
Why, I was just looking at the clubhouse bulletin board.
Did you see this notice?
Oh, the swimming meet.
Mm-hmm.
No, I hadn't seen this, but I knew about the meet. George is supposed to be in charge of it.
He is? Well, he must have done a pretty good job of teaching Laura Maxwell to swim. Look, she's entered the diving contest.
He didn't teach her to swim. He didn't have anything to do with Laura Maxwell. It was all a dream.
Liz?
Well, it's gotten to the point where it's driving me crazy, and I... Well, I'm sorry I yelled at you, Vivian, but... Oh, and I was feeling so happy over that fourth hole.
Liz, what's the matter with you?
Oh, I'm out of my mind, that's what. I'm haunted by Laura Maxwell. My husband had a dream that's turned out to be a nightmare. Vivian, that day I told you and even Howie and Corey about George and Mrs. Maxwell, remember Bobby pushed Betty into the pool just then?
Yes, I remember it well. He's still having some trouble sitting down.
Well, I was about to tell you I was ribbing George about a crazy dream he had the night before.
What?
Anybody want to play around with me? Vivian? Liz?
I said it was a dream. George told me about it at breakfast, and I got some uncontrollable desire to kid him about it that afternoon.
Hey, are you both deaf?
Then that business about the tattoo.
Just a silly dream.
Look, it's me, Eve. What on earth so fascinating you can't even stop to say hello to a guy?
Eve, we've been taken. Hmm? We've been doing our speculating all for nothing. It was a dream.
What was a dream?
About George and Mrs. Maxwell.
Oh.
All that stuff Liz told us was just something he dreamed.
Is that so?
Well, of course it's so.
Oh, I feel like a fool inviting her for his dinner partner. But even I thought you were serious. You seem determined to be a good sport about it. So.
Are you sure you're not being a good sport about it now, Liz?
Eve, you cynical little cat. Can't you take Liz's word?
Oh, let it go, Vivian. I'm surprised that even you believe me.
Wait, Liz! I'll pound some sense into this woman.
No, I'm going into the locker room and take a shower.
I don't know her personally, but I've seen her out here. They say she tattooed. Used to be an acrobat or something.
Yes, I heard that. She came here Farnham and Bailey, and then when she got mixed up with George Cougar, she just stayed on.
Isn't that a shame? A common circus performer. I wonder if his poor little wife knows.
She must. I understand they go out together all the time.
Liz, where are you going? Liz! George!
Honey, I wish you'd calm down and tell me what this is all about. I was just getting ready to play golf with Howie and Joe.
It was bad enough being kidded by our friends, but everybody in town's talking about it. Oh, George, you got to do something.
Me?
You got to stop this silly talk about you and Mrs. Maxwell.
Oh, now, Liz, you aren't going to let anything like that get you down, are you? What do you care what people say? You know there's nothing to it.
Oh, I don't know. I've heard this story come back at me so many times. Beginning to believe it myself.
Oh, now, honey. You're just getting yourself upset by a lot of old gossips that don't mean a thing to us. Now, we'll take you in the house and dry your eyes, and maybe I can get back in time to catch up with Joe and Howie. We've got a bet on, and I'm playing good golf today.
Oh, George, you don't even care. It doesn't even bother you.
Well, what's there to be bothered about? Oh, wait a minute. I'll come around and let you out.
Well,
who did this?
What?
What a cheap trick. If I ever catch the guy... It's going to take a razor blade to get the doggone thing off.
George, what are you talking about?
That sign on the back of our car. That sticker that says, tell it to the Marines.
Now, come on, Liz. Sit with Eve and me. Our seats are right over there. You see, Eve's waiting for us. And she's behaving all right. You know her. She can't resist a little juicy scandal, even if there's nothing to it. But I gave her a good talking to the other day.
Oh, I wish George weren't in charge of this darn swimming meet. I've gotten so self-conscious, I hate to be seen in public without him.
Well, you needn't worry this time. Every gossip in the place can see him right up there by the diving board, so nobody can wonder where he is.
Ah, okay. Hey, I'm not very good company
on.
These days.
You missed the kids' swimming meet. It was awfully cute. Getting duller, though, as the kids got older.
Well, move over and pass the programs down, Eve.
I don't seem to have a two here. Now, here's one, Vivian. You can look at mine, Liz.
Thanks.
Well, of all things, did you know this?
Hmm?
Have you seen what it says here about Mrs. Laura Maxwell?
No.
Former Aquacade star and holder of the California backstroke record.
Let me see that.
And all the time I thought George was teaching her to swim.
Eve, what did I tell you?
Oh, Liz knows I'm only kidding. After all, she has a sense of humor.
Was it by any chance you that put the Tell It to the Marine sticker on our car so I could have a good laugh?
Oh, no, darling. Now, don't blame me for everything. That was Corey. You know what a fiend he is about Joe.
There's Mrs. Maxwell now.
Doesn't she look stunning? That white rose.
Don't tell me she's going to dive in that.
Oh, no. George is going to gallantly... See? George, the cavalier, taking the fair lady's cloak.
Liz, there's the green bathing suit. Oh, she just turned around. No, don't mind me, Liz. I believe you absolutely about the dream and all that. But I just have to see for myself. Look, there's the fish. She has a fish tattooed on her knee.
Honey, what are you doing huddled up in a car all by yourself? Oh, come on, let's go get a drink.
I don't want one, thank you.
Oh, come on, get out. That's right. I saw you get up and leave. I couldn't think where you were going at first, and then I thought I'd look here in the car. We'll go in and have a drink.
Well, I'm sorry I didn't stay to see Mrs. Maxwell try to break her back stroke. How'd she come out?
Oh, I didn't stay either. I left as soon as I saw you get up. You know, Liz, there's something funny about that tattoo.
Yes, isn't there?
Just suppose I'm getting psychic or something. She's got it higher than it was in my dream. But still...
Hey, Liz! George! She did it!
I didn't know she had one, honey. Honest, I didn't.
She did it! She did it! Oh, what a baby. Just look at her. She broke her own backstroke record.
Congratulations, Mrs. Maxwell.
Come on, folks. I'll buy the drinks. Come on, we've got to celebrate. Hey, Bill!
Yes, sir?
Have you got any champagne?
Yes, sir.
Good boy. Now pour some up for the champion. She broke her own record.
And Mr. and Mrs. Cougat and I'll have a drink on that, too.
Yes, sir.
Man, oh, man, we're made.
Say, you two, what was the idea of leaving?
Huh?
You didn't get to see. Hey, what's the matter with Liz? Well, you weren't crying, are you beautiful?
Holy Mike, the tattoo. Liz, I didn't mean for you to fall for it. I was cooking it up for George.
Oh, you were?
I'm sure it was too good a bet to pass up. I bribed Laura to wear a green suit and let me draw a fish on her leg with my fountain pen. But everybody in the place knows it's a gag by now. See? Go on, show them, honey. There, you see? And when she came out of the water, it was practically washed off. Now, if you'd stuck her on a little longer... Oh, Liz, I meant to let you in on it, but I got so excited watching the exhibition. What a stroke. What a stroke, baby. It's perfect. You know that? Or nearly. There's just one little thing.
Is there?
Yeah. I think I could go use something that would really polish that backstroke till nobody could touch it.
Will you show me then?
Will I?
Here you is, Mr. Cartwright. Mr. Cartwright, don't you want the champagne?
Oh, I've got a sudden appointment, Bill. Give it to the Cougars. I'll see you kids later.
Well?
Well, I guess I'll have my champagne now. Pleasant dreams.
Oh, here, honey. Let me wipe your nose. You've got tears all over.
Yes, sir. What would you have, sir?
Who's that, George? Huh? The Marine who just came in.
Nothing right now, bartender. I'm looking for Mrs. Maxwell. You know if she's here? I'm her husband, Captain Maxwell.
No, sir.
Mrs. Maxwell just went down to the pool, Captain, with a Mr. Cartwright.
Oh, she did? Well, thank you.
Yes, he's teaching her to swim. May I show you the way?
You have heard Isabel Scott Rorick's story, Bad Dream, adapted for Author's Playhouse by Janelle Gibbs and directed by Mr. Norman Felton. Miss Kay Campbell was heard as Liz Cougat, Mr. Arthur Peterson as George Cougat. Others in the cast of Author's Playhouse tonight were Miss Eve Parnell, Mr. Wilms Herbert, Mr. George Caesar, Miss Mary Lou Neumeier, Miss Geraldine Kay, and Miss Bess McCammon. The musical was conducted by Joseph Galicchio. Next week, same time, same station, Author's Playhouse will bring you H. Vernon Dixon's gripping story of heroism below the sea. Two of a kind.
That's it for the Relic Radio Show for this week. Hope you enjoyed our selections this time. You can find more from John Steele, Adventurer, Author's Playhouse, this podcast, all the other podcasts, and thousands of other old-time radio episodes at the website relicradio.com. A website that is made possible by your support. If you'd like to help out, visit donate.relicradio.com or click on the link on the website. We've got some downloadable sets for certain donation amounts, though anything is always helpful and appreciated. Thanks for helping us keep going every week, and thanks for joining me this Tuesday. I'll be back next Tuesday with another episode of the Relic Radio Show.